Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument, and has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show for you tonight. It's a very fascinating one. We're going to take a look at another stringed instrument native of India, and it's the other prominent instrument of India and also in Hinduism, besides the sitar. It's the sarod. And my guest today is Stephen Day, who's a master at it. And it's an amazing instrument. I was trying to figure out how to describe it a little bit, because some of the things that he was playing on it, it sounded a little bit like a dobro, a little bit like a banjo, a little bit like a sitar. It was kind of a mixture. But I want to first welcome Stephen. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm honored and pleased to be here.
And so what I want to do really quick is just explain basically the instrument. Then I'm going to play a clip that you recorded. And then what I want to do is explain the instrument. We'll play the clip, and then after that I want to get into your background and stuff.
Sure. The instrument is 19-string sarod, and it has a fretless stainless steel metal neck, which gives it its sliding quality. And that sliding quality is common in Indian music because it's called meend, and it allows the emotion of the artist to come out in a deep, deep way. As you can imagine, when you can slide with such... intensity on the microtonal level, then it allows for a very deep emotional pull in the artist and with the audience. And again, for the sarod, that's a slide. For the sitar, it's a pull. Other instruments are different, of course. This has a solid piece of wood carved out of oftentimes teak wood. There's a plectrum on my right hand here, which is made of coconut shell. So if you lose it before a concert, you can go to the corner store and get a coconut and carve it out, which I've had to do at one point, just in time for the show. There is the steel strings, and I slide with my fingernail. So as you hear, if I'm not using my fingernail, that becomes...
So it doesn't sound as pronounced when you slide with the meat of your finger?
Yeah, that's right. It kind of mutes it. Whereas with my finger, it would be like this. And then again, muted.
Now, you can hear, what I'm hearing too, is you can hear how the instrument resonates when he's playing. He was doing a bunch of different scales. You can kind of hear it kind of just build up a little bit. But the way the we were talking about this a little bit before the show, with the drone strings and then just the way it is. There's like a sweet spot when you play certain notes and it really resonates.
That's right. Well, these strings are called sympathetic strings, and they are tuned to the piece of music you're playing, which is called a raga. And a raga is a way of, it's a structure of notes, like a scale, but a little bit different, because oftentimes we'll play the scale, quote unquote, differently going up as you would down, like a melodic minor or harmonic minor scale. And also the expression going up might be different than the expression going down. But what's important is that we stay within that note structure. So we don't start, I mean, improvising, yes, but we don't go and improvise outside of the note structure we set up. So once these strings, the sympathetics, are set up, then it creates that ring that we have to adhere to when we play the other notes. Otherwise, it would disturb the ring. And that kind of otherworldly, ethereal ring, which is partly the overtones, but more than the overtones. It's kind of a concert of amazingly beautiful heavenly sound that happens when you play the main string. So I may play the main string now, and the little strings, which are tuned to that, now are ringing with it.
Well, you can hear it. I'll have you play it again because I just interrupted you.
Sure.
But you can hear it when he plays a note. It'll kind of like blossom out a little bit, and that's the resonance.
That's the resonance. That's the beauty. So I'll play that same note.
Or play one and slide into it so you start hearing it come in. So you can hear the sympathetic strings as you slide it into it. You can just start hearing them. They blossom a little bit. Mm. Now, so in Indian music and in the Hindu music, it's not restricted to the 12-tone system, right? So they do microtonal.
That's right. Yeah, that's a big part of the music because, again, it allows for a depth of expression, which is emotion, which is actually called bhakti. There's nothing quite like bhakti in Western words, vocabulary, because bhakti implies a kind of devotion that is otherworldly. It's not just devotion. It's certainly not romantic. It's a very deep kind of dedication, devotion, and love to the different aspects of the divine. And, of course, in Hindustani, in Hindustan, there's Shiva, Brahma, Krishna, Rama, the goddess, are all objects of devotion that different people... living in India, there's a very, very spiritual land, and mm-hmm. most people, if not everybody, is having some form of bhakti for one of the aspects of the divine.
Now, you had mentioned when you had come in while we were setting up before the show that playing this instrument is a journey.
Mm, absolutely. And that's connected to what I was just speaking about. And it really is, and that's where the microtones come in, that's where the slide comes in, and that's where the deep devotion comes in. And this is a word that is kind of a scary word in the West, you know, devotion or religion or faith and that kind of thing. But when you play an instrument and musicians, it's all about heart.
And, yeah, it's and all emotion.
It's all emotion and heart. So when you discover an instrument or a type of music that allows you to open your heart in a deeper way, well, hey, I'm signing up for the journey, you know, whatever you want to call it, if it involves devotion or whatever. That's not my concern. As a musician, it's really about the devotional or emotional journey.
Right.
And that's the way I've kind of discovered spirituality or advanced my own understanding of spirituality is through music. And that's where the Sarod has stepped in and done the job for me because it's allowed me to go to other realms of emotional expression, which I'd not sure I could have reached on the six-string guitar. Perhaps one could argue that you could. It's just not the path that I took. I went from a guitar
now,
player to Sarod player.
You call it the Sarod. It's not Sarod.
I call it the Sarod, yeah. It's called the Sarod. There's another school that calls it. There's a few people that call it the Sarod, but no, it's pronounced Sarod.
Sarod. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I think that in hearing, and we're gonna play a piece in a second right now, but you can hear it, that emotional connection or that spirituality of from playing from the heart, you hear it. And and also, too, we're going to be talking about, because he uses the instrument as a session player, he uses it for TV and film in a more Western context and work. And so I think that that helps, too, because just like a blues player, which probably is the most most people would relate to as pure emotion. You know, it's not necessarily like jazz, which is very complex, or classical. It's straight feel. It doesn't have to be complex. It can be very simple. It can just be holding a note and how you bend it and how you your expression. It can make the, it's like night and day. And I think from what I've heard and hearing some of the stuff that you played, some of the recordings, and I was doing research for the show, you get a lot of emotion out of the instrument, and it's very expressive. The fact that he can slide and bend, not he, it sounds like bending to me because as a guitar player, but it's actually he's sliding in and out. You can hear that. Well, let's go ahead and play this first clip, which is Rag Malkans.
Yeah,
am I saying it right?
An evening raga.
And it's a, actually, it's a 35-minute piece, so I had a little, I had to be a little tricky in cutting it down to at least give you a feel of what he's doing. And this is an instrumental with sarod and tablas. And he based it on a this is what was in his notes. You can explain this. Mm. It's on a pentatonic scale, so it has a bluesy sound.
Yeah, it's a well-known evening raga, played in the evenings. All the ragas are played at different times of day because they have the different moods. And this particular five-note pentatonic scale or raga is bluesy. Because it, you'll hear it. There's some of the kind of the way it's structured is. Just the way it works.
It has a, and then also too, I want to mention this is a new piece that's going to be on an upcoming album.
Yeah, an album of traditional Indian classical ragas. Two on an album, 35 minutes each.
Yeah.
And a meditation exercise with sound as well. It's a life's work, just being able to master one of these ragas and record it. We it's kind of one take Charlie, you know? You just go for
it. Yeah, I don't see how you could punch in on this thing because you're playing all the time. It's it's a little tricky.
You can do a little editing, but, you know, it's got to be right, and it's got to be right for a long time. It's got to really be, you got to be in a space that's really. In the groove, and you got to stay on it for a long time.
All right, let's listen to Rag Malkans. Now, you can hear in there, I mean, this thing is a really drawn-out piece, and it gets much more aggressive later on. But I wanted to show the main theme, which showed the pentatonic scale, which you can hear in there. Yeah. And that's just you and the tablas.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's interesting, because I've never seen those the tablas are real aggressive. Mm. I mean, they're doing some pretty radical stuff there, which I've, from what I've heard more in, like, what I've heard in Western music, some of the tablas, it's usually slower. It's not that fast.
Yeah, well, in solo classical Indian music, concert style, the tabla will definitely take, we'll take turns improvising. And actually what you heard was me holding down the pattern, the basic pattern and groove, and the tabla doing a lot of improvisation. It's and then, you know, later, right after that part, he would just hold a basic beat, and then I would do some improvisation and return to the theme. Then we both get back to the theme together, and then he will take off. And what, you know, it, as the piece evolves, it gets faster in tempo. It's kind of like Stairway to Heaven, because Stairway to Heaven, you know, has those four four kind of distinct tempos. And Arag is much like that.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. And also, too, when he's playing that main theme, is you hear the drone building up. So it almost sounds like that type of drone that you more traditionally hear from a sitar, because you're hearing multiple strings resonating. So you're getting like a little chord drone in the background, so to speak.
Yeah, and I lied a little bit when I said it's just Sirota and tabla. There is a drone instrument, actually, traditionally played by a person in the background, and it's four strings, and it's just plucked over and over, creating a kind of rhythmic background.
What's it called?
It's called a drone, and it's a tanpura, actually. Tanpura is the name of it in Hindi and Indian.
T-E-M or
T-A-N, Pura, P-U-R-A. And oftentimes nowadays, and this is probably why I didn't mention it, is it's used, there's an electronic tanpura, or we just record, like in this case, we used a real tanpura, a large resonant tanpura, but we'll record it and loop it, rather than have a person actually sitting there doing it for 35 minutes. Traditionally, you know, you'd always have a person sitting there, and I used to do that for concerts for some people who would come through, and it's some of those concerts go on a long time, you know, two, three, four hours, and you're up there in the middle of the night, you know, just going over those four strings. Yeah, it's real interesting.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your background and your history and how you got into the sarod.
Sure. I'm a guitar player, and as a, you know, 18, 19 year old, as oftentimes people do at that age, I hit the road and did some Jack Kerouac-like hitchhiking across the country and travel, and what we call seeking dominated my thoughts and my life at that point. I had an experience when I was 18 in hitchhiking in Italy, which I felt this incredible feeling of joy throughout my body, and it continued throughout the summer, and from that point forward, I vowed that I would pursue whatever I needed to pursue to have that feeling in my life on a regular basis. And that, long story short, that led me all the way to India. And in India, more on a spiritual quest, I would say, than musical quest at that point. But once I was in India, being a musician, I recognized the spiritual quest and the musical quest are one, and I was able to take in many concerts and musical expressions where musicians would play from, you know, get called on stage at 2 a.m. and play till 6 and never miss a beat, and just absolute vitality. And one would wonder where does that vitality come from? Because it wasn't drugs, and it was like pure consciousness, absolute energy and vitality, and it captured my musical attention. And I knew that I wanted to pursue Indian music from that point forward.
Was it hard to adapt to, you know, learning harmonically, because it's so different and it's beyond 12-tone? Mm. Was that a difficult thing coming from guitar? Because you studied guitar for a while.
Yeah, I studied from a young age, classical and rock and roll and all kinds of different things. But it took me a number of years listening to Indian classical music. To really dive into the playing. I dabbled in sitar lessons and took tablas to be able to understand the rhythm. But I also listened to a lot of ragas. I actually had this funny job, recording, just copying cassettes, you know, like three at a time. But it was kind of a mindless job. You just hit the button and copy them, take them up, put them in. But because I was doing that while I was doing that, I just kept listening to Indian music. And I got to know a ton of different pieces that I, you know, were, turned out to be ragas that I would play later, but it was the background for what happened later. And when it came to actually studying Indian music, I had a background also in, you know, using the guitar with alternate tunings. drop D and various other tunings, you know, Michael Hedges gets more involved. But by opening up the neck, detuning and opening up the neck, I had evolved into playing in a way that is very similar to Indian music, which means you'll play typically, say, on the bottom string, or and then the drone will take over. So you don't really need to hit a lot of chords for it to sound great. Mm-hmm. It sounds big and resonant and open because of the drone will quality of the, you know, the strings that are tuned, and like, you know, drop D is a good example. So you can play just on one string, melodies on one string, and there'll be a ringing sound that will capture mm-hmm. your attention. So that was really the bridge. It was going from alternate tunings and into the serote, where
now the serote is there. One or two main tunings, or do they do whatever they want?
No, the tunings are mainly fourths and fifths. So this will be the main string. That's an octave right there. And the drones are tuned to a different octave, so they're three octaves. There's a little tuning issue there. And then this will be a fourth. And then we got a fifth. And that's the tuning. And no, there aren't really alternate tunings in serote or Indian music. The tuning is pretty standard, although there is movable sa. So this note here is C right now, but that could be B flat, or it could be, as it is in sitar oftentimes, a D sharp, or it's a movable do or first note.
Mm-hmm. So now when you adapt it to playing, like doing sessions and playing for film and TV, you're able to do that with the standard tuning, or have you had to modify?
That's a great question, because yes, I've had to modify for sure. Also in live performances with different artists, pretty trippy. I mean, when I first came to LA, it was like 16 years ago, I did some concerts with various musicians, and I literally really had to be completely I would keep it in one tuning, but the way I would play it would be different every time. And sometimes you would have open strings involved, and other times it wouldn't be. So I had to kind of, on the spot, figure out a scale to work with and then go from there. But no, in terms of recording for studio work, TV and film, I'll actually oftentimes come up with a new combination of tunings, much like you would with alternate tunings on guitar. So mm-hmm. what I'm really doing is kind of combining my background in guitar and my with the serote. But I'll do it till I get a ring. I'm not going to come up with an alternate tuning that doesn't ring with these guys.
So the tune you're talking about, the right now altering the tuning of the primary strings, but have you had to get creative with the drones?
Yeah, definitely the sympathetic strings as well. Absolutely creative. And what matters in the end is I'll just work at it until it all comes together in a new, unique tuning mm-hmm. That will ring just like this, you know, rings because it's tuned with the notes of the raga. Mm-hmm. But so whatever tuning I create, whatever way I've tuned the strings, the main strings, that will reflect in the sympathetics as well.
What amazes me a lot is the amount of sustain that it's, you know, some of that's from the resonance, but for the most part, when you're playing some, especially with the nail, it does ring a lot, considering. Now, that top, what is that top made out of?
This is sheepskin.
Sheepskin.
Yeah, and this, I'm just going to tap it.
Yeah, it's real live.
Yeah, it really gives a lot of ring there. And that you can hit with your plectrum when you play as well, so typically at the end of the raga, there's a very fast part, you know, like in Stairway to Heaven, it just speeds up and keeps going and going and going until the very end.
So you're hitting the top while you're picking. You're kind of...
Yeah, combination.
And then what's the bridge made out of?
That's bone. And there's a piece of bone there, and then also down, there's three parts, one in the middle to hold up the sympathetic, one at the end.
So everything that the string, yeah, the nut, if you can call it that, and then there's like a little, like a banjo, there's a little string holder like they would have for the fifth string on a banjo.
That's right, yeah.
So that's all bone.
Yep. So all natural materials, as you might expect, being from India. And the steel strings, although they are from, a lot of times they're piano, mm-hmm. and they're from Germany. A lot of times they'll get them.
There's a wire or something near the bridge. Is that set up with a pickup?
No, this doesn't have a pickup. You can do that, and I've got another Sirode that I use with pickups.
That's electric.
Stuff. Yeah, electric. And the only problem, of course, it's tricky, but is getting the resonance at the same, getting the sensitivity and the electronics with the pickup and maintaining the resonance and being able to get
Yeah, it would seem that the bridge, if it was a contact pickup like in the bridge, like a Piezo or mm-hmm. something, you wouldn't get the drone. But I don't see any holes where you could put a mic in the
No.
chamber so that you could actually get the drone.
Yeah, it's that's tough. You know, Rick Turner up in Santa Cruz and I have been working on something that will, you know, he's a great guitar maker and
he made Alembic.
Yeah, and you know, he's real familiar with the different types of pickups and various other things. So we're working on something that will be as sensitive as possible and get that feeling of the Sirode whilst with the ability to create chords like a guitar has in a hybrid instrument.
Now, when they were playing in India, when they would play like all night or whatever, mm-hmm. did they mic them or were they just playing acoustically?
They're mic'd in a bigger stage. Traditionally, of course, when they're before microphones, these instruments were played in palaces and places where the reverb was kind of natural. And they are loud, and once you adjust to not having a mic, they're very robust instruments, the Sirode, the tabla, and of course had to have a kind of a presence and a loudness that would reach back into the back of the courtyard and that kind of thing. But everything's mic'd now.
Now, is the Sirode... The Sirode's range, it sounds richer and deeper, so the sitar doesn't go as deep as that instrument?
It's a different sound, different quality, different tone. Believe it or not, for those of you out there into yoga, they're connected actually to the chakras inside of our bodies. because Indian music is this kind of music being connected to meditation. And therefore, each note is related to the chakras, and each instrument has a speciality of not only sound, but also a connectedness to our inner being.
So which chakra is this connected to?
The Ajna, the sixth center, and it opens up the third eye.
The third eye.
Yeah.
And what's the sitar usually?
The Sahasrara. The crown chakra would be the goal or destination of all seeking.
Okay.
It's the thousand-petaled lotus.
Now, playing with a sitar player, mm-hmm. and before we get into contemporary stuff, but in playing with a sitar player, is it, I mean, obviously they for generations have been playing together, but in your own experience, is it difficult? How do you approach playing against a sitar player?
With a sitar player, the tricky thing is a tuning, because sitar players are tuned usually a little higher, and you can't really tune a Sirode properly up that high. So you have to find a tuning that works for both, and they don't always like to come down to C. Sirode, you know, also feels good down at B flat, but works in C, doesn't really work in D. So that's a lot of times the tricky thing is to get the tuning right with it.
But it's not like using a regular guitar with a baritone guitar. It doesn't work that way?
No, not so much. Of course, the tones are different. There's some famous recordings with sitar and Sirode. It's called a jugalbandi, actually, and literally means back and forth when you're playing together. And it's not too common, but once in a while, you know, the Indian classical music is really a solo trip,
mm-hmm.
Solo instrument and tabla. That's generally the way it is, one lead instrument. And sometimes you'll have two rhythmic instruments and a solo instrument, but it's not so common to have two solo Indian instruments. Amazing when it works.
Well, when you've written for stuff where you've had a sitar with your, how do you approach the writing for the sitar?
Well, it's similar because we're based on ragas. So, you know, from the point of view of composition, as long as you understand raga, then you can compose for any instrument at all, Western or Eastern. it's about knowing the notes. And
well, I mean, in terms of do you have the sitar play less? Because the sitar can get pretty full.
Yeah. Then oftentimes they might trade off, or you might do unisons. You can work with harmony as well. Less common to do that, but there are a lot of different ways you can work different instruments in different songs or in the course of an album. I've done some TV film stuff where it depended on the character of the composition, which instrument would work best, and whether it would be good to have two stringed instrument or maybe get a flute going. And I just worked with lots of different combos. I was lucky to have a budget, and I had to be creative and come up with a lot of different stuff, so I was able to go, well, let's try this, and let's work with this,
right,
and let's try that.
Well, and later, when at the end of the show, I'm going to play a clip that's an original composition that's in a rock genre where you're actually using it in a contemporary Western way. And in there, you have the tablas, the sarod, you have the Indian flute, and you have sitar. But, I mean, like in a situation like that, how did you approach the sitar? Because I can hear the droning of it.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing a lot of activity. The sarod is doing most of the, if there's melodic work that you're doing, it's doing it.
I think I doubled it. But then, you know what I did? I recorded it with a sitar player in India, and I overdubbed the sarod. I took different takes. The sitar player did an entire 30-minute version of that piece that we're going to listen to. So we're going to listen to, you know, a part of probably the 3-4 minute pop song version of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also based on a raga. It sounds like a pop
song. So you actually took a performance of a raga and edited it into this piece?
Yeah, but the song is based on a raga.
Because
all my writing is, you know, just like, because I'm so versed in raga as well as Western music, I'm always thinking about what raga we're tying into. And sometimes I'm specifically going from ground up, from the raga up. So in that particular piece, it was raga first. And therefore...
The main hook, the namaste... Mm-hmm. Vocal line is a raga?
It is based on a raga, although I do take some liberties in that case. It's a traditional raga, but then I'm going to, because there's harmony and because it's a Western, I mean, ultimately a pop song, I'm going to take a liberty or two with different notes outside of the raga. But that work from a harmonic point of view. So if it works, it works. And that's how I blend, and that's how I really create an East-West combo. And it's a combo that's not just cut and paste. Like, you know, you'll hear a lot of, here's a song, and now I'm just going to throw a sitar in there. That's not what I do.
It's definitely, and we'll hear it later, it's definitely integrated.
Yeah.
It's not just, a little bit of an effect.
Right. Yeah, no, because I'm building the songs with ragas and as a basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then having the harmony work within that context, and what it works in that context in a kind of a modal way, and we go in and out because it's built that way. There can be parts that are more Western sounding, mm-hmm. and other parts that are more Indian sounding, and the whole spectrum is covered really when you can get it just right.
It seemed to be comfortable in both genres.
Yeah, that's it, because of the way it's structured.
Now, I'm going to play in a second this other piece that you have for guitar and sarod and drums, but I wanted to know, have you done sessions with the sarod with orchestra?
Yes.
Now, what's the, any issues or any, because now remember, you're in and out of 12-tone, you're going around, is that a...
Yeah, the notation, because orchestra's written work, written scored music. Two sides to it. I mean, of course, the sarod can act as a, you know, just a note by note, no slide kind of instrument. It doesn't pull upon its depth if you do that, and I have done that. But if there's an improvised part, there can also be written in, you know, to a classical piece, into a score, that there's going to be a number of bars, for instance, that are going to be improvised. For any instrument, but sarod in particular. So there's a few techniques to doing that. But of course, there's a certain amount of precision that goes with orchestral music that the Sirode, if the Sirode's going to double that or try to be part of that, then the Sirodist has to play with the kind of precision of a Western note-by-note musician, classical musician. But that's, of course, not the only way to include, you know, Indian instruments in an orchestral way. But again, what I do is raga-based up. So I'll get the orchestra is going to be playing the notes of the raga, basically. And unless we find mm-hmm. something in harmony, which I pull in, then, you know, we might get them to do that. But that kind of gives the Indian instruments some freedom because mm-hmm. everybody's in the same tonal, mystical tonal mm-hmm. mood, and then everything can work from there. It's really that takes over. It's getting the beautiful mood and not breaking it. That allows a lot of freedom within that context compositionally and also as a performer.
Well, as working with, like, for example, doubling lines and stuff, for example, what works and doesn't work, like you doubling or playing a line together with a solo violinist or a flautist or oboe or, you know, any of the woodwinds, what works and what doesn't work from your experience?
Well, if you're going to double, then you got to have a certain amount of precision and, you know, that works if you can do it, you know, if the artist can do that. And then...
Because it seems like the violinist, he can mimic some of the slides and stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, that's true. I've played with a lot of violinists, actually, and there is a kind of, you know, kinship there because of the fretless nature. But you know, you can sort of slide into a bassoon note or something a little bit. And there's a little bit of play in almost
everything. But tonality-wise, does the instrument pretty much blend with all the orchestra instruments, or are there some that you got to kind of be careful? Like, for example, I'd wonder, noting the timbre of the Sirode, would it work with an oboe or a French or cor anglais or something like that?
You know, that's a good point. I think that some of those instruments could, they're full bodied in a way that can kind of overtake the sound of a Sirode. So you brought up a good point there. There are certain instruments that would work better. I've arranged for harp and Sirode, for instance. That was a really nice combo. I arranged some Sirode with a flute, as you'll hear in Namaste. But that's kind of a part-by-part thing where the flute will come in and then come out, and then the Sirode will come in and out. So sometimes it's going to work better. Believe it or not, I've done some creative stuff with steel drums, which has never been done before. And we do that in a show called Awakenings. And based that performance piece, we play a raga together. And the steel drummer, it's got a kind of a resonance. Steel drums have a kind of a resonance. The ringing sound is where we meet. We meet in the ring. And so even though they're completely different instruments, you might never really think those two would go together. They really do seem to work.
Yeah, well, and maybe that other one, it looks like a flying saucer.
Yeah,
that people tap. They tap. I forget the name of it.
Yeah. Oh, you mean when? Oh, yes, I know what you mean.
It's like two bowls together, but there's little spots where there's tonality.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a steel drum. It's a little mellower though.
Mm. Yeah. So that's been a great experimentation and coming up with different ways to bring different instruments together that we might not otherwise conceive. But I maintain that you can do anything as long as you're in the raga.
Yeah. Well, let's listen to this one is called Texas Chainsaw Masala. And do you want to explain that?
Yeah. Well, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it's film music, and masala is a spicy mix. So we just came up with that as kind of a filmy mix, a spicy mix. And I picked it for this show because I know there are a lot of guitar players out there, and there's some drop D, I believe, or alternate tuning playing on that guitar.
What guitar did you use?
It was a Taylor.
A Taylor. Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to write that down.
But I, it was done in England, actually, quite a while ago.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to this. This is Texas Chainsaw Masala. Thank you. Now that had more of a feel like a, almost like a, some of the riffs that you were doing was a like a dobro. It felt to me like a dobro.
Yeah.
But what's interesting now that, even with the guitar, did you build it from a raga? So you actually are approaching the guitar from a raga?
You know, in that case, I think we went with the guitar tuning first, and we, and then I made the sarod work with the guitar tuning. So I created a melody on the sarod that worked with that guitar tuning.
Because it's, I love the, I mean, the chords that that Taylor just, it's a beautiful.
Yeah,
sound.
Yeah, it's a great sound, and you know, I didn't actually play the guitar, and I'm. I think what we'll do is maybe send it. I can't remember right now. It's like 17 years ago. And I want to send out a plug for the guitarist. He did a great job on it. And I played the sarod over it. But, yeah, it was just really coming up with the guitar part was there. And then I just came up with the right notes that sounded right.
But you set up and told him what tuning and how to set up the tuning.
Yeah, I set up the tuning with him on guitar and then worked the sarod into that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have shown us, and we're almost out of time, but I want to really just a brief sample. You've been playing, I've been playing pieces of the sarod with other instruments. What I wanted to hear is something, the sarod as a solo instrument. Is it used in that way?
Yeah, the sarod will be, at the beginning of every raga, we'll just hear the sarod without tabla. And then as the raga builds up, the tabla will join, as we heard earlier. So I can play a little bit of rag Kirdvani. This is based on a minor scale.
Love it. Yeah. The way you use the slides, to me, that's the that really just makes the instrument for me. Now, we're almost out of time, and I do want to play that other piece, but I want to talk real briefly of some of the other things that you're doing. First of all, everybody, check out www.stephendaymusic.com. That's his website. But I want to talk about these two organizations that you founded, co-founded one with John Tesh. First is Ombience.
Ombience, yeah, it's a nonprofit society.
And what's Ombience trying to?
Ambience of Om. Om being the world's first sound. The sound okay. would be, you know, when the world or universe was created, it was through Om. And so what we do is create or work with artists and art that has a resonance that is got those kind of sympathetic sounds.
Okay, because I mean, it was in the. The bio, it said it's dedicated to self-reflection through the arts, and I wanted you to explain that a little more.
Yeah, that's great. No, self-reflection meaning that it's like a layer deeper than just sort of, salty pop. Pop is great. That would be the first layer. It's on the surface, kind of, you know, the notes on the surface. But then there's a like a resonance in the sarod that we've talked about with the sympathetic strings. These notes are ringing when you're playing this, and there's a metaphor to life there, that we go about our days, we are very active, especially in this part of the world, and we put a lot of emphasis on the things we do, the actions we do, but we don't always take a lot of time to reflect upon them, meditate upon them, but yet that's so important, because by reflecting upon what we're doing, we're able to guide ourselves in a deeper kind of spiritual way, which then ends up maybe being more harmonious with, say, the environment or other people around us, and makes us more harmonious people in general, and ultimately gives us a more deeper and satisfying life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the aim of these different types of art forms, is that the audience is allowed to and encouraged to self-reflect and go into those deeper states of meditative awareness, which Ombien supports. So we really kind of work with different artists in different genres, not just music, that whose art has a kind of a self-reflective quality.
And then also, too, you co-founded with John Tesh the Arts and Entertainment Radio.
Yeah, we created a station online that ended up winning a lot of awards. It's a network with a bunch of other college stations here in Los Angeles at a charter high school called Champs Charter High School. Amazing situation whereby high school students, being so savvy with music here in L.A., we're not only competing but just doing an incredible job of creating incredible music that, like I said, won awards in this network of 45 other college stations.
So the kids are making their own music.
They're making it mostly. It's playlists and you know, making their own shows, coming up with different types of music and commenting on them, finding new artists or up and coming artists, and bringing that forth. Because they're tied into the underground. They're tied into what's fresh and what's real and what's coming. And they're discovering it before anybody else.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of like when I saw The Clash at a little ice arena before they hit it big. And I was in high school. You know, that's kind of the spirit of it. It's like, wow, you know, we saw The Clash at this tiny little ice arena just before they hit big. And that's what these kids are doing. They're discovering the next Clash or whoever it is. It's cool.
And then finally, are you guys going to be playing locally, or you do anything coming up, any gigs?
We're going to be doing an Awakening show in the new year. Right now I'm recording a lot, so I'm focusing on the album, and I want to get the album done. And then we'll be doing some shows to highlight the music and the album more towards the spring and summer. So stay tuned. One of the shows is called Awakenings, and the other one is my solo stuff, which I do on my own. So my website is Stephen Day, and it's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. StephenDayMusic.com, and I'll post all my upcoming shows.
And he's also on Facebook, too.
Yeah.
So check that out. I want to thank you again, and we'll definitely have you back. There's more to cover. I want to hear this new album, the other stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're going to play this Namaste, which was based on a raga. And this is a original composition with vocals, full rock band. It's a song with tablas, sarod, Indian flute, and sitar. Anything else you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's the full meal deal. Enjoy it.
It's a great song. I really like it.
Just want to thank all the different people involved with that. I'm not going to say everybody's name, but Shankar, Bernard Fowler with the Rolling Stones helped out, and just a lot of other artists, and I want to thank them for contributing. And Matt Malley of the Counting Crows, who I record with, big plug out to you.
Everybody, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. This is Namaste. Everybody have a great week.
Of the tide, there are fires that burn through your thin disguise. When the wind blows high, there are tears in your eyes. She said she spent some time in Palestine with the Turkish jewels and the tube lights shine. And she wrote Arabic rhymes from the tombs and shrines, from the London wind to the California pine.